Good morning to each one. It's a blessing to be here. When I think of the various ages of youth, it's a very important time of your life, and you're setting many patterns that will follow you. Specifically today, I'm thinking of relationships. We are setting patterns that will not only affect us now, but when we're old. Brother Jesse said we're focusing on you as youth, and yet the effect when if we live to be an old man or old woman, possibly how many friends we have by the patterns we set now. That's not the most important goal in our life, is to have a lot of friends, and yet by the way we respond to others affects how others respond to us. So how is our relationship this morning with others? Relationships can be good, they can be bad, and there's a lot in between. How are our relationship with others today? There's many things that will cause good or bad relationships. So what is a relationship? The first definition in the dictionary would say, the way in which two or more people, groups, countries, etc., talk to, behave toward, and deal with each other. So I want to think about when two or more people talk to, behave toward, and deal with each other. So how are we finding it today? Are we having good, lasting relationships? What are we finding today? Or do we have failed relationships? Is there a pattern in our life? Are we friends with one person for a while, and it seems that goes bad, then we're with another one? When we look at our own lives, what is happening? And it's good to make new friends, but I think at the same time we should be able to continue with old friends, continue with relationships. If we are having that problem, do we ever wonder why? Why do we struggle with our relationships? Why do we keep running into broken relationships? And as the title is, Responsibility in Relationships, are we willing to take responsibility for my part in a relationship? Not so much the other person, but my responsibility in relationship. So how am I talking to, behaving toward, and dealing with others? That's a question we want to ask ourselves. How are we? You may have heard the story of a man that was moving to a new area, and he stopped at a town, and he asked, what are the people like there? Here. And the man responds, what were the people like where you came from? And he said, whatever the response was, he said, well, that's how people are here. So, and that's very true. The moral of the story, wherever we go, we bring ourselves, our faults with us. That's very simple to understand. We are not going to usually change who we are when we go somewhere else. We bring who we are, our faults, our strengths, our views of ourselves and of others. We bring that with us. And they affect how we behave toward, deal with others, and how we talk to others. They affect. And, as I said, others will respond accordingly. Others respond accordingly. So number one, how do we have good relationships? First of all, our relationship with God affects all other relationships. That's one of the key things here. If we want good relationships, we need to stay close to God, stay connected with God. If we are close to God, we are desiring to please Him, and then we will also be serving others. And we're desiring to serve and please Him. Caring and thinking about others will result in being kind, thinking of others instead of myself. I'm thinking of focus on others. And that affects how we can connect with others. What we think of ourselves and others affects how we can connect with others. So again, if we're having trouble with relationships, go back and check our relationship with God. That is what we need for truly good relationships. How strong is our love for God? And our relationship with God is very crucial in relationships, and I won't spend a lot of time on that because, Lord willing, tonight, Brother Stanley Sensi, that will be his message, our relationship with God. That is very crucial if we want good relationships. So to have good relationships, we also need true love for others. Notice I said true love for others. There's a difference. When John moved to Paraguay almost 50 years ago, logs were still sometimes transported to the sawmill with ox carts. Such a logging cart had wheels about 8 feet tall and was drawn with 6 oxen. Each wheel was made of wooden pieces held together by an iron rim. As long as the rim stayed firmly in place, a cart could haul very heavy loads for long distances. But if a rim started to come loose, it had to be repaired. So if you can picture a wheel 8 feet tall would be a bit higher than me, and I'm picturing wooden spokes and then a metal rim around it. Each part was important, but if that rim became loose, the whole thing would fall apart. So if it came loose, it had to be repaired. The first repairman cut a short piece out of the rim and welded it together again to make it a little bit smaller. Then he built a large fire to heat the rim, causing it to expand. And when the rim was hot, he put it back together again and then put water on it so it would shrink to tighten up. This made it shrink firmly in place, binding all the parts into one solid wheel. So in our homes and churches, true love is what binds us so we can carry heavy burdens for a long period of time. True love is what binds us together. If this bond is not firmly in place, small differences often become large problems. If that's not in place, it changes how we view things and become large problems. If this bond, faults and weaknesses that we never noticed before begin to irritate us. Do we ever notice that? If our attitude towards somebody changes, more things irritate us about them. It changes how we think about them. We cannot confidently share our struggles for fear of being betrayed. We forget how to forgive. Small gestures of kindness and sincere words of appreciation are neglected. So once there's lack of true love, we start responding differently to that person. We no longer appreciate them, so we no longer give words of kindness and appreciation. And, of course, they will respond in turn. They will sense that. The solution is found in 1 Peter 4:8. Above all things, have fervent charity among yourselves, for charity shall cover the multitude of sins. To find the perfect bond that will hold our home and church together under stressful conditions, we must daily practice the principles of 1 Corinthians 13, which is love. And I do want to turn there, spend a little bit of time in 1 Corinthians 13. It's a very familiar chapter, but if we do not have true love, we will not prosper in relationships. And I want to look at 1 Corinthians 13, verses 4 to 7. And if you have a Thompson chain Bible like I have, the side of the Bible says the marks of love. These verses 4 to 7 are marks of love. And as we read this, we should check our heart. Do we have those marks of love? Starting at verse 4. Charity suffereth long and is kind. Charity envieth not. Charity vaunteth not itself, is not puffed up. Does not behave itself unseemly, seeketh not her own, is not easily provoked, thinketh no evil, rejoiceth not in iniquity, but rejoiceth in truth, beareth all things, believeth all things, hopeth all things, endureth all things. So, the marks of love. Verse 4, it says, suffers long. That would mean enduring evil or injury without being filled with revenge or resentment. That's a mark of love. Enduring evil or injury without being filled with revenge or resentment. Putting up with many slights and neglect from the person it loves. Back to what I said, that article I was reading earlier. If we have true love, we can tolerate, if you will, other people's shortcomings. Maybe I should not say tolerate. We will overlook them more than just tolerate, but we can overlook them. Putting up with many slights and neglects from the person it loves. Love is kind. It would mean to be useful, searching for opportunities to do good. Be useful, searching for opportunities to do good. That's what it would mean there, to be kind. That's what love is. Love envieth not. If we have true love, we will not envy others' abilities, qualities, or prosperity. That takes true love to do that, not envy. I think probably most of us can say in our lives we have a tendency to envy others that are better at something than us, or maybe they're prospering in some way. We have a tendency to envy, but if we have true love, we will not envy, but instead, true love shares in and rejoices with others. Can we do that? That will go a long way in good relationships. Instead of envying others, we will rejoice with them. We're glad to see you're doing well or whatever. That's the kind of attitude we will have. We are compliment them for their talents, their gifts, their prosperity. We will compliment instead of envy. It takes true love to be able to do that. If we don't really care for somebody or we have envy, and I'll probably get on to more of that later, but we can hardly do that out of a true heart, compliment them or praise them. Love vaunteth not itself, is not puffed up. That would mean that we don't inflate ourselves, brag, make ourselves look better, and does not despise others or trample them or scorn them. Can we do that? Instead of inflating ourselves, and instead, we esteem others better than themselves. Esteem others better than ourselves. Can we do that? What is our view of us and others that will affect our relationships greatly? Do we think highly of ourselves? Do we have pride? Or do we think of others better than ourselves? And that does not mean think nothing of ourselves, but think better of others than ourselves. Verse 5, love does not behave unseemly. Unseemly would mean not proper or appropriate for this situation. So love responds in right ways for situations at hand. Love seeketh not her own. Love is an utter enemy to selfishness and does not seek its own praise, honor, profit, or pleasure. There's a verse that says, let another man praise thee and not thine own lips. What do we think of somebody that praises themselves, talks good about themselves? I don't think we would think highly of them, but a selfish person will tend to want to do that. We want to lift ourselves up. But love seeketh not her own, is an utter enemy to selfishness. Love is not easily provoked, not easily angered. Where love is, the flames of wrath will not easily kindle. Where love is, the flames of wrath will not easily kindle. So with relationships, as I said, it's so crucial we have true love. And then love thinketh no evil. That means does not suspect evil in others. We do not quickly suspect evil in others. Matthew Henry says, true love is not apt to be jealous and suspicious. It will hide faults that appear and draw a veil over them, instead of hunting and raking out those that lie covered and concealed. It will never indulge suspicion without proof. It will hardly give to an ill opinion of another, and will do it with regret and reluctance when the evidence cannot be resisted. So you see the difference. Thinketh no evil, does not suspect evil. A person has true love will not, it said, rake out hunting and raking out those that lie covered and concealed faults of others. Instead of trying to rake them out and make expose the faults of others, we will be reluctant to even talk about them to others. Think about what that will do to relationships. We're not trying to make others look bad. In verse 6, love rejoiceth not in iniquity, but in truth. Some of these kind of repeat, but does not take pleasure in faults of others, but in good. Does not take pleasure in faults of others, sins and faults. Verse 7, beareth all things. Found that interesting. It means to roof over, to cover with silence. To roof over or to cover with silence. That's what love does. Believeth and hopeth all things. Trusts someone, thinks the best of them. Believeth and hopeth all things. Endureth all things. That would mean persevering through tough times. We will persevere. We won't just quickly drop a friend. We will persevere through tough times. So I think if we want good relationships, if we can get a hold of those four verses, we'll go a long way. As I said, ultimately, our love, our relationship with God, and then these, if we have these marks of love, will affect how we relate with others. I think then we can have good relationships, good friendships. The other thing, the golden rule will go a long way in good relationships. I think we're all familiar with that. Do unto others as you would have them do unto you. Sometimes, and I may touch on that later, but we should change that to do unto others as we know they would like us to do to them. Because sometimes that is different. When we don't know a person well, do unto others as we would have them do unto you. It's pretty much what we need to go by. But if you know someone well, their preference might be different. So we would need to relate as they would prefer. So thinking of loving each other, using the golden rule, there's a song I just want to read. Let us love each other with a heart that's warm and true, ever doing to our brother as to us we'd have him do. When the heart is sad and lonely, and the eyes with tears o'erflow, gentle words and deeds of kindness fall like sunbeams on the snow. Let us help our fallen brother, lift him gently by the hand, speaking words of cheer and comfort, point him to a better land. In this world of toil and sorrow, many hearts are full of care. Let us live to serve our Master and each other's burdens bear. Kind and loving to each other, gentle words to all we meet. Thus we follow Christ our Savior, proving all his service sweet. Do we have that kind of love and care for others? What is our life showing? Are we having that kind of care and love for others? Another thing for good relationships is we need the compassion of Jesus. When we think of Jesus, how he responded in situations, Luke 19:41 says, and when he was come near, he beheld the city and wept over it. And that would be the city of Jerusalem. When Jesus approached Jerusalem, he was keenly aware of the events that were soon to happen. He also knew when and where these should take place. As Jesus was descending from the Mount of Olives on a steep and winding path into the Kidron Valley, an impressive view of Jerusalem unfolded before him. If you can just picture him going down there and seeing the city, there was the temple standing in magnificent splendor inside the eastern gate of the walled city on the opposite slope. There was the house of Caiaphas, the high priest, where Jesus was to be questioned right after his arrest. The Garden of Gethsemane, where Jesus was to be betrayed by Judas, lay at the base of the Kidron Valley, where Jesus would ride by on his way to the temple. So, think about Jesus. He knows what's going to happen. He's seeing all this. All these visual reminders of what was about to befall Jesus stood in full view as he descended from the Mount of Olives into the Kidron Valley. What was the response of Jesus? He wept, but not for himself, as other men would have been prone to do. He wept for the people of Jerusalem. Think about Jesus when we think we're having hard times. He wept for the people of Jerusalem who had already rejected him and would soon band together to clamor for his death. Jesus' tears were not for the Jews only, but for all people who reject salvation, which he had paid so dearly. So when we think of Jesus, of course he is always the perfect example. But can we be like him, weeping and caring for others instead of pitying me? If we're having hard situations, do we focus on ourselves? Or can we see others, what they're going through? Can we care enough to show we care? Are we able to reach out, think beyond ourselves, instead of pitying me, focusing on me and what I'm going through? Think of Jesus, how he wept for the others. He knew what was coming. And bearing one another's burdens is one of the ways we can show we care for others. How can we do that? I think there's many ways. One way is to provide a listening ear. Another way is to pray for them. These things all show we care. Praying for others is another way for good relationships. But we need to truly care for them, care about them. Not if I'm praying for them because I think I'm better than them. That will not be beneficial. But because I truly care for them and about them. Most, if not all people, desire close relationships with someone. What is my responsibility in a good relationship? And you'll hear this many times. What is my responsibility in good relationship? Just a little bit from John Koblentz's book, Getting Along with People God's Way. Trust is a requirement to experience healthy closeness. We move toward people we trust and away from people we do not trust. When we are with people we do not trust, we put up our guards, we protect the secrets of our heart, and we are unwilling to give personal information, express our thoughts, or share our feelings. I think if we just ponder that, it's very true. If we don't trust somebody, we're not going to open up. We won't share. We will move away from them. Why don't we trust some people? I think as we meet people, we analyze them subconsciously, possibly. Is this somebody I can trust? We meet a new person. So we start sharing with them. As time goes on, we might realize we can be friends with them. We start getting closer to them. But something can happen for us only to decide we cannot be a close friend to them or trust them and share deeply with them, because we can see several things happening. Possibly one is we realize we're sharing about ourselves maybe deeply, but they are not. But they're sharing much about others and seem to enjoy bringing out the bad of others. So we start seeing they're focusing on others, they're guarding themselves, they're not sharing deeply. And it's kind of a one-way relationship. We need to be able to be a true relationship that goes somewhere. We need to be able to share about ourselves for it to go somewhere. Or we may not be able to trust because we did share deeply and they told others. We realized we shared deeply and we thought this is somebody we can trust in, but they blew it around to others. And if we betray somebody, it takes a long time to build that trust back up again. Can't really blame people, anybody, except that's the reality. If we betray somebody, why would they want to come and share deeply with us again? Learning to communicate well is important for good relationships. Let's turn to James 3 for that. Learning to communicate well is important for good relationships. And obviously one part of communication is our speech. There's many parts, but right now I'm going to focus on our speech. James 3, 1 to 12. My brethren, be not many masters, knowing that we shall receive the greater condemnation. For in many things we offend all. If any man offend not in word, the same is a perfect man, and able to also to bridle the whole body. Behold, we put bits in the horses' mouths, that they may obey us, and we turn about their whole body. Behold also the ships, which, though they be so great and are driven of fierce winds, yet are they turned about with a very small helm, whithersoever the governor listeth. Even so the tongue is a little member, and boasteth great things. Behold how great a matter a little fire kindleth. And the tongue of, and the tongue is a fire, a world of iniquity. So is the tongue among our members, that it defileth the whole body, and setteth on fire the course of nature, and it is set on fire of hell. For every kind of beasts, and of birds, and of serpents, and of things in the sea is tamed, and hath been tamed of mankind. But the tongue can no man tame. It is an unruly evil, full of deadly poison. Therewith bless we God, even the Father, and therewith curse we men, which are made after the similitude of God. Out of the same mouth proceedeth blessing and cursing. My brethren, these things ought not so to be. Doth a fountain send forth water? Doth a fountain send forth at the same place sweet water and bitter? Can the fig tree, my brethren, bear olive berries, either a vine figs? So can no fountain both yield salt water and fresh. So I think we can see it's pretty obvious. Our tongue is a powerful thing. It's a powerful thing in making or breaking relationships. What are we doing with ours today? Verse 2, if we offend not in word, that would mean sin or fail or stumble with our tongue. If we do not fail with our tongue, we are a perfect man, complete, mature in growth and mental and moral character. So if we can handle our tongue right, it shows we are mature, complete, in mental, mature in growth and mental and moral character. It shows much about who we are by how we use our tongue. Verses 3 and 4, it says, whithersoever the governor listeth, or that would mean in today's language, wherever the pilot wants it to go. Whithersoever the governor listeth would mean wherever the pilot wants it to go. It talks about there putting the bit in the horse's mouth or the helm or rudder of a ship. Both appear small and insignificant. And they are both small compared to the bit, compared to the horse, or the rudder compared to the whole ship. But that is what controls, is used to control the whole thing. And our tongue can do just like that. It can control many things. It can has much power. In verses 5 and 6, it talks about the tongue just like a match is all it can take to start a forest fire or burn a large building down. That's all it can take. Our tongue can do the same. In verses 5 and 6, it talks about, verse 6 especially, okay, how great a matter a little fire kindleth, and then it goes on in 6, that it defileth the whole body and setteth on fire the course of nature, and it is set on fire of hell. So as I said, just as a match can ignite a little fire that can burn a whole forest or a huge building or cities, our tongue has the ability to ignite a fire in someone, to set them on a course, a wrong course, and damage that person for possibly the rest of their life. Our tongue can do those kind of things. It can affect a person for the rest of their life. Do we see the seriousness of our words, how we talk to others or don't talk? when we're silenced can have damage also. Now verses 7 to 12, I won't read over them again, talks about taming our tongue, taking control of it. We need to do that if we want good relationships. Have we tamed it, or is it, as it says here, is it an unruly evil full of deadly poison? What is our tongue like? Is it, what does it speak? Proverbs 12:18 says, "There is that speaketh like the piercings of the sword, but the tongue of the wise is as health." So you can see what our tongue can do. Pierce as a sword, or the tongue of the wise is as health. Thinking of our words and our tongue, I think a rule of thumb is if we talk too much, we tend to exaggerate. We tend to become foolish or gossip. Not always, but that we lend toward that if we talk too much. Just read a couple verses in Proverbs 16. You don't have to turn there. Proverbs 16, 27 and 28. Thinking of how much we talk, what comes out of our mouth. Proverbs 16, 27. "An ungodly man diggeth up evil, and in his lips there is as a burning fire. A froward man soweth strife, and a whisper separateth chief friends." So we can see an ungodly man diggeth up evil, and in his lips there is as a burning fire, and it soweth froward man soweth strife. So our words, yeah, it affects our relationships greatly. So the question can be, what is the right amount of talking for a healthy relationship? I don't have a set answer. Some of us may need to push ourselves to talk more. Others force ourselves to talk less. And I'm not saying we need to change our personality, but think about our words. How much are we talking? What is my part in relating to others? I know as a young boy, when I think of some of the youngest ones here, 13, I would have had to really push myself to do what I'm doing today. Even talking in a group, I was very shy. I should have done it more, push myself to talk. Some of us may find it very hard to speak out when we should. Our personalities are different. Our situations are different. But are we willing to push ourselves to get out of our comfort zone? And that can be actually pride. Pride comes in many forms, but we can be fear of what others think, fear of failure, stepping out. So can we think about the amount of words we speak? It all affects our relationships. When we talk to others, let us think about, what am I talking about? Is it about myself? My interests. We can soon lose interest in somebody's conversation if we meet them again. We know probably they will talk about themselves, their interests, and especially if we don't have the same interests, we will think, do I feel like hearing about all that again? There's many ways we can draw other people into our lives. One way is to, when we meet somebody, ask how they are, what's happening in their life, about them. Learn to know them better. And as I said, we each have a responsibility. The one being talked to has a responsibility. If we just say yes, no, that won't go anywhere either. We have to push ourselves to value people and go beyond that. What is my responsibility in relationships? Am I willing to look at myself if I'm having trouble? What am I doing? How am I responding? And I think, forget if I have get to that later, but obviously we can be so much that we are talking to the others, asking them questions. We can actually do that in a wrong way too, and actually putting a shield around a wall. We don't want to share about ourselves. That's not good either. We don't even share anything about ourselves. That is not healthy either. Another part of communication is being a good listener. Are we a good listener? James 1:19 says we should be swift to hear, slow to speak. Swift here would mean prompt or ready. Am I prompt and ready to listen? Some of the things we can show by listening is kindness, respect, concern, compassion, goodwill, and thoughtfulness. I'll just repeat that. By listening, we can show or demonstrate kindness, respect, concern, compassion, goodwill, and thoughtfulness. Did you ever have one, and maybe some of you younger ones would not have had this happen as likely, but did you ever have somebody thank you for caring and helping to help them in some way? When you think, all I did was listen to them. That's about all you did, maybe ask a few questions that were pertinent or that showed you care. But really, that's about all you did was listen. But they were thankful. There's a few tips on being a good listener. Number one, pay attention, put aside distractions. And I find myself, that's something I lack in at times. If my mind is busy, of things on my mind, but can we put aside distractions and pay attention, listen to them? It shows they are important. What they are saying is important. Acknowledge your listening by at times nodding. You can say things like, I see what you're saying, or okay. We acknowledge that we're listening. Three, try to understand the heart of the speaker, not just the words. Because, yes, we say words, but we understand really what they're meaning. Understand their heart, not just their words. Number four, try to visualize what they're feeling. Try to put yourself in their shoes. Try to visualize what they're feeling. And then, in a kind way, try to repeat back. So, is this what you're saying? Is this what you're feeling? It shows that you are hearing and understanding what they're saying. It shows we care and we're trying to understand. We're not just listening and, oh, well, you have a problem, yeah. Number five, then listen when we speak back to them, observing how our words are affecting them. Listen while we're speaking and observe. Our words will affect them, and usually you can get some kind of feel how it's affecting them. And number six, be respectful when listening. No matter who it is, do we listen in a different way depending who it is? Remember, everybody has feelings, and everybody's made in the image of God. Remember that. Be respectful when listening. Now I want to switch gears a little bit and think about things that hinder good relationships. Some of these things will overlap, or obviously, it's just the opposite. James 3 again. Just want to read a few verses there again toward the end, 13 to 16. James 3, 13 to 16. Who is a wise man and endued with knowledge among you? Let him shew out of a good conversation his works with meekness of wisdom. But if you have bitter envy and strife in your hearts, glory not and lie not against the truth. The wisdom that descendeth not from above, this wisdom descendeth not from above, but is earthly, sensual, devilish. For where envy and strife is, there is confusion and every evil work. So, these are the kind of things that hinder good relationships. Bitter envy and strife. It says it's not from above, but it's earthly, sensual, devilish. Do we have that in our heart? That's what will hinder good relationships. And it goes on, if you look at what verse 16 says then, for where envying and strife is, there is confusion and every evil work. It doesn't just say a little bit of evil work, but every evil work. Where there is envying and strife, those are very damaging to relationships. And I think envy and jealousy go hand in hand. The effects of them are very powerful. Envy and jealousy, very powerful. And the fruits of it are very devastating. Envy and jealousy, put that together. And they can grow into a monster. And one of those things we'll often do is once we have envy and jealousy, we will desire to bring that person down because of envy and jealousy. And this can be accomplished in many ways. We want to bring them down. So one way we can do that is when we no longer think the best of someone, we become suspicious, assume some negative thoughts about them, and then it builds in our mind. We become suspicious, we think negative thoughts, and it builds in our mind. We add this together. And in our mind, it's truth. We add it together. But it's all out of suspicion and negative thoughts. So what happened now, we believe a lie. But it's all on assumptions. If we never confirm that these are truths, we add it together. Now we're believing a lie, and we pass it on as fact. But it's all on assumptions. So what has happened? A rumor has started. We've started a rumor. And we may have just ruined somebody's reputation for life. I want to read one verse from Proverbs. You don't have to turn there. Proverbs 20:19. He that goeth about as a talebearer revealeth secrets. Therefore meddle not with him that flattereth with the lips. Talks there about a talebearer. Meddle not with them. So we can... Rumors are sometimes true and sometimes not true, but we can actually, as I said, pass things on thinking it's truth, but it's actually not. We just believed a lie because of assumptions. Another way we can hinder good relationships, and these are kind of connected, but kind of the same and yet a little different. If I'm known as someone who likes to tell juicy stories, we know that somebody, they just enjoy that. That will not build trust. That is not the kind of person we would think. We hear them saying this and this about somebody. It's not the kind of person we will think, I want to share my deepest feelings, some of my struggles. It will not build trust. Not with somebody that has a heart that enjoys spreading rumors. Proverbs 17:9 says, he that covereth a transgressor seeketh love, but he that repeateth a matter separateth very friends. If we repeat a matter, we separate friends instead of building relationships. So as I said, rumors, gossip may or may not be true, but it's something that, if it is true, something that does not need to be repeated or should not be repeated. We may have heard the saying already, that sounds like something that came from the rumor mill. That's an old saying, that something we question, we wonder about it. And as I was thinking about this, you know, a mill usually makes something and they need something to deliver it, or it won't prosper. It won't continue. So am I willing to be a delivery person for a rumor mill? Am I willing to do that? Am I deliver the product so it can prosper? Am I willing to do that? Am I that type of person? I think we just check our own hearts. Or as Proverbs 26:20 says, where no wood is, there the fire goeth out. So where there is no talebearer or slander or whisper, the strife ceaseth. If we don't feed something, it will go out. What is our part? What do we do in situations? Do we pass it on? Do we help a rumor prosper? Or do we help cause it to go out? Proverbs 16, 27 and 28. Just so many things in Proverbs about our relationships, our speech, our what we do and say. Proverbs 16, 27 and 28. An ungodly man diggeth up evil, and in his lips there is as a burning fire. A froward man soweth strife, and a whisper separateth chief friends. So an ungodly man diggeth up evil, and in his lips there is a burning fire. So if we're digging out evil, wanting to pass it around, we should check our heart, go back to our relationship with God. What is it like? Are we enjoying spreading things around? So am I willing, instead of passing around questionable things, willing to be a part of letting it go? Or the other option is, depending on what it is, talk to them to see if it's true. To see if it's true or not. I think of some times we hear something questionable, but once we, and especially if we know the source, we doubt if it's true. And unless we check it out, we don't know if it is, but we just, there's some times with things we don't believe it, so we just write it off. The sad part is that usually still there's a question mark over that person. Because of something we heard, we can hardly erase it. That's the sad part. If we hear things and we don't know if it's true. Thinking of rumors, there's a story you may have heard already. I don't remember all exact details, but a man started a rumor about Joe. One day he was at Paul's house and he was telling the story to Paul about Joe. And through talking, they realized it wasn't true. So Paul gave the man a bag of feathers and told him to walk to the next town, scattering feathers along the way when you get till they're all. And when he came back to Paul with an empty bag, Paul said, "Now you go gather up all those feathers that you strewed along the way. Go gather them up." And the man says, "That's impossible. I will never find them. The wind blew him around. That's impossible. It's not possible." That's when Paul said, "That's the same way with the rumor you started. You can repent and say you're sorry, but you will never be able to, for sure, have everybody find out that that was not true. Because it went, who knows where it all went, and you could have ruined that person's reputation for life. You can probably never totally restore his reputation, just like you could never find all those feathers and put them back in the bag." Let us think about the power of our tongue, our words, what they can do to people. These things will all hinder having good relationships. Another thing, a couple verses in Proverbs again. I don't know how, if we deal with this at all. Proverbs 25:17. Withdraw thy foot from thy neighbor's house, lest he be weary of thee and hate thee. And 27:14. He that blesseth his friend with a loud voice, rising early in the morning, it shall be counted a curse to him. So as you can see, as I said earlier about the golden rule, here's a time we may need to think about the other person. What do they prefer? Do unto others as they would prefer. Be sensitive of others. It's just common sense. Are we overstaying our welcome? And as the other verse I read said, blessing his friend with a loud voice, rising early in the morning. Obviously, some people like mornings. Some people are morning people, that kind of thing. Be sensitive of others and their schedules. All those things, if we are not, can hinder relationships. We can, or staying too long, those kind of things. Another thing that can hinder a relationship, if we're easily hurt or offended, we feel like we have to be so careful around this person because I might say the wrong thing, do the wrong thing. It will not cause relationship to prosper. Not being honest with who we are, being a fake, will hinder. If we're not truly honest, others can sense they're not. I think I touched on that earlier, but we're not being real. We're not really finding anything out about them. We're just putting on a facade and we're faking like everything is going well. Another thing that hinders is if we're not able to accept other people's personalities. Everybody's different. Some people, I'm not talking about sin, but just difference in personality. And I believe it could just be maturity in our own lives if we clash with people because their personalities are different. Can we truly accept people for being different? Can we actually enjoy the difference? If we truly have love, we can enjoy the difference in personality. Often I believe it can either clash or we can enjoy the difference, depending how we take it. Thinking again of hindering, we may communicate with people, and sometimes we do it electronically or with letters. That can be good, but it is less personal, and we are more likely to say something or do something hurtful when we're not face-to-face talking to them. So, and I think whether it's a text or email or a letter, we can more easily be misunderstood. There are some things that we should go in person and talk to them. It shows it's important that we care. In a text or whatever, we can try, but usually we cannot show really how we feel as much as face-to-face. There's no facial expression, no tone of voice. And I know some people are much better at words than I am, but it's not the same. So that's just a few ways that can hinder our good relationships. There's probably many others, but that's just a few ways. Now the next part I want to do is look at some scenarios. Each one of us look at ourselves. How do I relate? When you came this morning, how did you respond to others? Did you try to talk to them and draw them out? What was our response? Was I partial in any way? And is it normal for me to be partial, or do I try to draw others out, connect with many? Some of the things I think we could ask ourselves, how did we do this morning? How do we normally do? Next thing I want to think about, let's say, come to church on Sunday morning, there's visitors there. What do we do? And I think especially for young people, if there's somebody about your own age, it's especially important. What do we do? Do we kind of walk by and ignore them, just pretending we don't see them? And maybe that goes back to we need to push ourselves to open up and reach out. Or would we smile, say hello, but walk by? Or go over and talk to them, be friendly, but soon leave, thinking I did my part, Or the other thing we can do is maybe we're talking to them, another friend comes and starts talking, and then we leave thinking now someone else is there and befriend them. That's not all wrong, but it's not the best we can do. It is definitely shows a more godly character if we at least wait till somebody else is there to befriend them, to be a friend. But that's not the best we can do. The better thing to do would be not only befriend them, but try to draw them into our group of friends. Somehow draw them in. Find a way. There's every circumstance is different. And of course, the person has to respond. But if we think about all the things I talked about earlier, will affect how they respond. Are they willing to? And some, not everybody will respond. Do I care enough to do that? Do I care, or am I too self-focused, self-centered on myself, my friends? Think about how I would feel, or how you've been in situations, how people did or did not when you went to a new church or a new whatever. You didn't know people. How did I feel in those situations? What kind of people made me feel welcome? And one more scenario. I'll just use the name Sally. She comes to church or wherever, and there's three groups of girls standing. Which group would she feel like she can join? The first one, we'll call it Group A. They look like a friendly group, but they're standing in a circle, and the circle's closed. There's no, she would have to be pretty bold and open the circle. The next one, the circle, there's a circle, but as she comes near, the circle kind of opens and they make room for her. Or they're standing with an open circle. There's room, she can easily join in. Which one do you think she would want to join? I guess I would, possibly the last two, but the first one, it would be pretty difficult for her to, she would have to decide, okay, am I brave enough to risk walking up? What if they don't really open, they just kind of stay with their shoulders toward me? It takes a pretty brave person to do that. All these things affect our relationships. It will affect how others respond to us. And it affects how we respond, as I said it again, our relationship with God. Do we truly have love for others? How selfish am I? They're all connected. Am I willing to step out? And my fourth point is, our words and interactions have consequences. I just read a saying this morning, I believe it was, we will eat the fruit of our interactions. We will eat the fruit of it. Maybe we should taste our words before spitting them out. Think about what the flavor of it. What is it going to do to others? So when we think of eating the fruits, are we careful with our relationships so we don't have to go patch them up, or sometimes others try to patch them up? I think I'll read part of this. I was going to read about a story. Just pick out a few verses in 1 Samuel 25 about Nabal and his wife Abigail. In 1 Samuel 25. I think we know this story. I'll say it briefly and pick out a few verses. We know that Nabal was a churlish man, which would mean cruel, grievous, hard-hearted. And that's the kind of man he was. And David's men came to him wanting, could you give us some food? That's verse 8. Ask the young men, and they will shew thee. I should start at 7. And now I've heard that thou hast shears. Now thy shepherds which were with us, we hurt them not, neither was there aught missing unto them, all the while they were in Carmel. Okay, they're asking for things. Ask the young men, and they will shew thee. Wherefore let the young men find favor in thine eyes, for we come in a good day. Give, I pray thee, whatsoever cometh to thine hand unto thy servants and to thy son David. So one thing I found interesting there, we come in a good day would mean it was on a feast day, and people were normally more generous. It would appear like why they came that day, but not Nabal. And it goes on in verse 10 and 11, and Nabal answered David's servants and said, who is David, and who is the son of Jesse's? There be many servants nowadays that break away from every man his master. Shall I then take them bread and my water and my flesh that I have killed for my shears and give it unto men whom I know not whence they be? So David's young men turned their way and went again and came and told him all these sayings. And it goes on, David said unto his men, gird ye every man his sword. And it made David very angry. And we know how it goes on. His wife Abigail tried to patch it up. She knew what her husband had done, so she took food and things to David and his men. And I want to just point out, she came in humility, verses 23 and 24. And when Abigail saw David, she hasted and lighted off the oss and fell before David on her face and bowed herself to the ground and fell at his feet and said, unto me, my Lord, unto me, let this iniquity be. And let thine handmaid, I pray thee, speak in thine audience and hear the words of thine handmaid. Let my Lord, I pray thee, regard this man of Belial, even Nabal, for as his name is, so is he. So she came in humility, trying to fix up what her husband had done. And we know that it did work. So yes, our relationships are the way we respond. Our words, our interactions, they have consequences. And if we don't follow God's principles, we will many times have to try to fix up things, try to patch things up because of what we did wrong, we said wrong. And yes, we're human. We will at times do this. But is it a pattern in our life? Do we have to patch things up? We wish we wouldn't have said that. We offended somebody. Am I willing to take responsibility for my part in relationships? Also, and I won't turn there, but Mark 7:20-23. There it talks about what cometh out from within is what defiles a man. And what comes out shows what's inside. And that is what will affect our relationships. What comes out, how we respond, what we say, what we do. So, thinking of relationships, this focus is on our relationship with our peers mostly at this point. But how we are responding to our peers now, let's say if we live a long time, let's say 30 years from now, 50 years from now, you'll probably think back to things that happened in your life, how this person or that person did something kind to me or mean, right? You know, whatever. We will be able to think back many years how they responded. Do we care? It's not just about now. It's about our whole life. We're setting patterns of who we will become, who we are. There's a, and I won't read the article, but I found this in my study stuff that called, what you are today will determine the nature of the old man you will meet. Or you could put in the old woman you will meet. It just basically goes down through saying how we are today is setting a pattern for that old person you will meet someday. And when we go visit an old person, aren't there some that we much more feel like going to visit again? What's the difference? And I know a lot have aches and pains and troubles, but some, that's basically what they talk about. Others, you hardly know if they're having aches and pains. They're just so interesting. They're sharing and such a blessing. What kind of old man and old woman would we like to be? And as I said, things will go with us. I just want to finish with a little story here, thinking about how our actions affect us not only today, but for the rest of our lives. Years ago, many rural roads were unpaved and often muddy. In one county, the officials devised a plan to improve matters by regarding the roads and spreading gravel to make the roads passable in any weather. The first part of the project was to survey the roadbed. The surveyors marked the new roadbed with wooden sticks. It so happened that along one road, the marker sticks ran past a certain farm. This farm was the home of curious little fellows who were eager to investigate anything new. Of course, they discovered the markers. They were the perfect size for many things, teepees, bows, arrows. So the boys pulled up many of the sticks along the road in front of their property. Papa was not pleased when he discovered their treasures, and he firmly reprimanded the boys for pulling up the sticks. The next morning, a father and two humble little boys walked out to talk to the surveyor. The boys confessed their misdeed and waited uneasily for Mr. Surveyor's response. But to their surprise, the man was smiling. He knelt, put his arms around the two boys and said, "I was a little boy too one day." That was all he said. Those two little men are grown up today, but they have never forgotten the surveyor's words. So let us be like children of God, humble and forgiving. And I think of, as I said, I'm 49 years old, but if there's things that we can remember probably clear as today, stuff that happened when we were little, that by adults or peers in our life, how they related to us. It showed whether they cared or did not care. They were sensitive, not sensitive. So as I said today, I just want to encourage each one of us to take responsibility for our part in relationships. We are setting patterns for the rest of our life, and it will affect how people respond to us. May God bless you and go with you.